It is Friday, April 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Pyongyang vows its toughest action against the United States. Turkey prepares for its constitutional referendum on Sunday.
I think in case that there is yes vote, this is not going to be a rosy picture for Turkey, I would say.
And a new documentary explores the history of the Boston Marathon. It's all ahead. We begin with the escalating tension between the United States and North Korea. North Korea's military Friday responded to U.S. President Donald Trump's renewed threats to take care of Pyongyang's nuclear threat amid expectations of a new nuclear test that could come at any time. I spoke with VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman and asked him about the adamant reaction from North Korea to President Trump.
Yes, Sarah, I don't think that's surprising in the least bit. The rhetoric out of Pyongyang is very fiery much of the time. I think what is significant is we have a statement now coming from the general staff of the Korean People's Army in Pyongyang. That's a higher level than the statements we've been getting earlier from the foreign ministry or, say, coming in an editorial in a state-run newspaper. So the words need to be looked at very carefully when we start to get statements coming from the military apparatus.
What is the Chinese perspective on this? Because Beijing is North Korea's closest ally.
Well, as Xi Jinping told President Trump, according to the president at least, things aren't as easy as you might imagine. There's a long and complicated history between China and the Korean Peninsula, and Pyongyang just doesn't listen to everything that Beijing tells it to do. The Chinese Foreign Ministry on Friday had its briefing and said that the situation on the peninsula is complex and sensitive and urged calm and restraint, and saying that whoever, you know, conducts some sort of provocative act will be deemed irresponsible. But we know behind the scenes that the Chinese are perhaps leaning on North Korea a little bit heavier than they have in the past. China is going to stop flying to Pyongyang. Some coal shipments have been turned away, and there's threats that they might cut off the oil supply to North Korea if they go ahead with either some long-range missile launch or another nuclear test.
Well, the U.S. decision to drop a very powerful bomb on Islamic State in Afghanistan, did that really bring this crisis to a head?
No, I don't think so. I mean, obviously, the timing is interesting, and coming on the heels of the Tomahawk strikes on the Syrian airfield in response to the chemical gas attack by Syrian forces. Certainly, this is all being noted in North Korea, and they said as much in the statement that they put out today, referring to the Syrian airstrike and acknowledging that it was intended to be a message. The bomb that was dropped in Afghanistan with much great fanfare, the mother of all bombs, the Moab, just isn't the type of weapon that could be dropped on North Korea. It's got to come out of a slow-moving aircraft, and the United States has the capability to fire cruise missiles into North Korea from afar. So I think most military analysts would tell you that that's not going to be a weapon that would be dropped on North Korea.
Meanwhile, President Trump is spending this Easter weekend in Florida. However, I'm sure he's monitoring from there the events going on around the world.
Yes, what's remarkable is he didn't seem to take any of his most senior aides with him. Of course, it is the Easter weekend, and perhaps some people were intending to spend the time with their families. But I can tell you today here at the White House and next door in the Executive Office Building at the National Security Council that it is a busy day, even though it's Good Friday, and everybody's anticipating what we may see when the sun comes up in Pyongyang later today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Steve.
You're most welcome.
That's VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. Well, Doug, there's a lot going on around the world.
There is a lot going on around the world, but this North Korean tension has seemed to have be generating a lot of focusing a lot of people's attention. Let's go back very quickly. Take a look. Just yesterday, President Trump tweeted this out. He quote, "I have great confidence that China will properly deal with North Korea. If they're unable to do so, the U.S. with its allies will USA." Now that really kind of ratcheted things up. I mean, the Carl Vinson, the U.S. Carl Vinson Task Force, a battleship group, is off the waters of the Korean Peninsula. That hasn't helped tensions. But in response to this, North Korea's vice foreign minister said that President Trump is, quote, "making trouble with aggressive tweets." So Twitter is in some ways kind of playing a role in this. A lot of people are also sharing information. Now, we can't confirm, like so much on social media, much of this is not confirmed. But there's one Twitter user, Torea, he is a independent journalist, and he has posted video of a whole line of Chinese military vehicles that he says are deploying to the North Korean border. We don't know that that's true, but he says it is. And there are other comments. I think, let's see, this one Twitter user, and again, we can't confirm this information, but she says that North Korea has confiscated portable devices from foreign correspondents. They stopped tweeting about an hour ago. Huh. So we'll see there what happens. A lot of people expressing their opinions about what they want to see happen, or conversely, what they don't want to see happen. Lots of tension. But just as Steve Herman was saying, I think he may have just said there, you know, really, I think we're going to know where this story goes within the next, at most, 24 hours, probably even sooner.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Syrian residents and rebels evacuate from besieged towns. Turkey could reevaluate or suspend all migrant deals with the European Union. The massive bomb strike in Afghanistan divides Afghan opinion, with critics questioning U.S. motives, and India's most ambitious tax reform is set to roll out on July 1st. Expanded coverage in these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Two Canadian researchers say they have constructed a composite image of dark matter filaments that make up what cosmologists call the cosmic web. Scientists have been finding evidence that our universe may be anything but random, and that everything is actually organized and connected to each other like an enormous spider web. The researchers from the University of Waterloo in Ontario, Canada, used a special technique called weak gravitational lensing to make their findings. After gathering a number of gravitational lensed images of more than 23,000 galaxy pairs, the scientists were able to create a composite image they say shows the presence of dark matter between the galaxy pairs. The Canadian duo found that the dark matter filament bridges are strongest between galaxy systems that are less than 40 million light years apart. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Good Friday is commemorated in Jerusalem. Turkey holds a landmark referendum Sunday that offers voters only two options, yes or no, on whether to replace the country's parliamentary system with an executive presidency. It's not just about answering a key constitutional question, but it's also about one man, President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, who would be granted sweeping new powers if voters say yes. The outcome is expected to bring about the biggest change to Turkey's system of governance since the founding of the modern secular republic nearly a century ago. Ahmet Zozan, a political science professor at Eastern Mediterranean University on Cyprus, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, whichever way the vote goes, he doesn't see much change in the way this crucial country is governed.
Well, it seems like the polls are showing sort of a tie between yes and no. But in both cases, I think, in case that there is yes vote, this is not going to be a rosy picture for Turkey, I would say. It will be for some time an authoritarian rule under one man's control, where we won't be seeing separation of powers, checks and balances. In case of a no vote, I am not very optimistic because we have seen in 2015, in June, there were the elections, and AKP was not able to form the government by itself. Erdogan didn't like the result, and a few months later in November, the elections were repeated. And then Erdogan got what he wanted. So similar to that, I'm afraid that if there is a no vote, he might find a way to repeat the referendum in the next few months or something. So we might say deja vu.
Is he supported popularly by the people of Turkey, or are they split like the polls indicate?
Oh, just like the polls indicate, I think that half of the Turkish population loves him or finds him as the best person to maintain, quote-unquote, stability in Turkey, but the other half basically hate him. A lot of people voted for him because they believe that Turkey does not have an opposition, an alternative to Erdogan that can take Turkey to a different course. So a lot of people vote for stability. They believe that, okay, he might not be the most democratic person in the world, but at least some people believe that he provides stability in Turkey. And that's why a lot of Turks are voting for him. But at the same time, we should also keep in mind that a majority of the printed as well as visual media is under Erdogan's control, is under Erdogan's influence. So this competition is not really a very fair competition, I would say. So a lot of people, average working people who do not have much time to spend on thinking about these things, you know, they take what the media present them for granted. So when it comes to the media power, I think that he started the game at least a couple of yards ahead of the no-sayers.
Ahmet Zozan said he does not see this as a choice between Turkey's secular tradition and its Islamist roots, but rather about one man's aspiration to be the absolute decision-maker, as well as the continued drift toward autocracy. Christians around the world are observing Good Friday, marking the day that Jesus was crucified. Robert Berger was on scene where the events took place in Jerusalem and filed this report for VOA.
Thousands of pilgrims packed into the narrow cobblestone alleyways of Jerusalem's old city for the traditional Good Friday procession. Singing hymns and reading from the gospel, they retraced the footsteps of Jesus to the 14 stations of the cross. Many of the faithful hoisted large wooden crosses upon their shoulders. It was a big turnout this year because the Eastern Orthodox and Western churches, which use different calendars, are observing Good Friday at the same time. Pilgrims came to Jerusalem from all over the world, including Lindsay Bush from Los Angeles in the United States.
I think it's an incredible experience to be able to walk down the streets that we know Christ had been walking down. I think it's an amazing experience to be able to recognize these are all the Christians coming together to think about and commemorate the Savior's life and the sacrifice that he made when he was here.
Israeli police and soldiers armed with pistols and assault rifles patrolled the crowded streets of the old city. Ebba Andersen, who came from Denmark, said that is a provocation.
I see uniformed people, but I also see people in civil clothes wearing weapons in the open. That's quite provoking to me. It's provoking to me to see all the arms in the wide open. And we don't see weapons in the open in Denmark in public.
The procession wound up at the Church of the Holy Sepulchre on the site where tradition says Jesus was crucified and buried. On Easter Sunday, Christians will gather in the same church to celebrate the resurrection. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
This is International Edition. This coming Monday marks the 121st running of the Boston Marathon. On a recent trip to the city, I observed runners out on a Saturday morning training for the world-famous race. On April 15, 2013, the Boston Marathon bombing shook the world. Two bombs that exploded 12 seconds apart near the finish line of the race killed three people and injured an estimated 264 others who were treated at 27 local hospitals. At least 14 people required amputations. Movies such as the feature film Patriots Day have offered a dramatized account of those events. But John Dunham's recent documentary Boston, narrated by Boston native Matt Damon, looks beyond the bombings, weaving an uplifting narrative of the race from its inception in 1897 to 2014, the year after the attacks. VOA's Penelope Pulu has more.
And they're off, some of the fastest men in the world.
The Boston Marathon is officially underway.
By the size of the race, the sheer enthusiasm of the 36,000 racers, and the community spirit during the 2014 Boston Marathon, no one would have guessed that the year before, the event, its participants, and the city itself had been devastated by a terrorist attack. The bombings weighed heavily on the heart of filmmaker John Dunham, a marathon runner himself who had planned years before the attacks to make a documentary about the history of the race.
There were a number of feelings. There was certainly a lot of grieving for what had happened. I walked up and down Boylston Street every day as soon as I arrived here in Boston in January of 2014. And just thought about it, you know, every day.
His documentary Boston does not focus on the pain and fear in 2013. Instead, it chronicles the Boston Marathon as an event that has fostered charity, unity, and strength since its inception.
A big field of international stars away in a mob scene in the Boston Marathon. 26 miles of tough going ahead of it.
Dunham's film follows the growth of the event through the decades. The race has become more selective, the runners faster. They come from all over the world to compete.
Who want to run like me?
One of them is Kenyan Wilson Chebet.
Long time ago, when I was a child, I used to run to school 3.7 kilometers. Lunchtime, you come back, you go to school after lunch, and then evening you come to home. Yeah, four times in a day.
The documentary shows how the race has also grown into a major fundraising event. It started with Greek Olympic athlete Stylianos Kyriakidis, who won the Boston Marathon in 1946.
And used his notoriety as a Boston Marathon champion to raise funds and put together supplies that aided Greece after the war.
With just a few days before this year's race, Boston is getting ready. T.K. Skenderian, Director of Communications at the Boston Athletic Association, is in the middle of the preparations.
In the year that followed, and in the years that have followed, the sense of solidarity and community pride that has emerged from not just those injured, but people locally, people around the world, has been overwhelming. I mean, that sense of civic pride, city pride, pride in the sport of running has been enormous. Yeah, we were knocked down, but we got back up in a big way.
2 days before the 121st running at the Boston Marathon, John Dunham's documentary is appropriately premiering in its namesake city.
There's so many things that we can't control in life, but getting out and running and setting a goal like running a marathon is something that can be done, and it really does change lives, and something very, very positive.
Scripture tells us to run with endurance the race that is set before us.
Penelope Pulu, VOA News, Boston.
And this note that VOA's Andrew Pelshevsky will be in Boston for the marathon. And on Monday at 16 hours 30 Universal Time, tune in to Sunny Young and the Sunny Side of Sports for race coverage. Well, the new U.S. spy chief blasted the anti-secrecy group WikiLeaks in his first public comments, labeling it a hostile intelligence organization out to damage the United States as much as any terrorist organization. CIA Director Mike Pompeo said Thursday it's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is, a non-state hostile intelligence service, often abetted by state actors like Russia. Pompeo went so far as to lambast WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange as a darling of terrorist groups, saying a member of Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula recently thanked Assange on social media for providing a means to fight America in a way that AQAP had not previously envisioned. Pompeo's remarks to an audience at the Center for Strategic and International Studies here in Washington are consistent with previous comments from the U.S. intelligence community. That's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
President Donald Trump recently hosted Chinese President Xi Jinping for a two-day meeting at the president's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida. After talks with President Xi, President Trump called the relationship between the two men outstanding, with the potential to resolve many issues of concern. President Xi said, "We have engaged in deeper understanding and have built a trust, a preliminary working relationship and friendship." At a press briefing after the meetings to outline the issues discussed, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said that President Trump emphasized to President Xi the need for China to take concrete steps to level the playing field for American workers, stressing repeatedly the need for reciprocal market access. The two leaders also discussed the urgency of the threat of North Korea's nuclear weapons program, reaffirming their commitment to a denuclearized Korean peninsula and to implementing UN Security Council resolutions. Both sides agreed to increase cooperation and work with the international community to peacefully resolve the issue. Mr. Tillerson noted that North Korea creates unique problems for the Chinese and that the United States is prepared to chart its own course if China is unable to coordinate with the United States in dealing with North Korea. Regional and maritime security was an additional area of candid discussion. President Trump, said Mr. Tillerson, noted the importance of adherence to international norms in the East and South China Seas and to previous statements on non-militarization. He also noted the importance of protecting human rights and other values deeply held by Americans. In order to spur progress on issues, the two sides agreed to establish a new high-level framework for negotiations. The U.S.-China Comprehensive Dialogue will have four pillars, Mr. Tillerson said: a diplomatic and security dialogue, a comprehensive economic dialogue, a law enforcement and cybersecurity dialogue, and a social and cultural issues dialogue. President Trump welcomed President Xi's invitation to travel to China for a state visit at a future date. the two leaders agreed to work together in the meantime to ensure a successful and results-filled visit. Their goal is to undertake an ambitious agenda for their bilateral relationship that will show progress and achieve meaningful results that will benefit the citizens of both countries.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.